The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Second Canto, Chapter Number 5, Text Number 2. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari. Recorded on August 19th, 2015, in Austin, Texas, USA.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yat Rupam Yat Adhishtanam Yata Shristam Idam Prabho Yat Asangstam Yat Param Yat Cha Tat Tatvam Vada Tatvataha Yad Rupam Yad Adhishtanam Yata Shrishtam Midang Prabho Yat Sangstam Yat Param Yatcha Tat Tatvam Vada Tatvataha Yad Rupam Yad Adhishtanam Yata Shrishtam Midang Prabho Yat Sangstam Yak Param Yatcha Tat Tat Vam Vada Tat Vataha Yat What Rupam The symptoms of manifestation. Yat What? Adhishtanam. Background. Yata. From where? Shristam. Created. Idam. This world. Prabho. O my father. Yat. In which? Sangstam. Conserved. Yat what param under control yat what are cha and tat of this tatvam the symptoms vada please describe tatvataha actually. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear Father, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done? Purport. The inquiries by Narad Muni on the basis of factual cause and effect appear very reasonable. The atheists, however, put forward many self-made theories without any touch of cause and effect. The manifested world as well as the spirit soul is still unexplained by the godless atheists through the medium of experimental knowledge. Although they have put forward many theories manufactured by their fertile brains. Contrary to such mental speculative theories of creation, however, Narada Muni wanted to know all the facts of creation in truth and not by theories. Transcendental knowledge regarding the soul and the super soul includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the basis of its creation. In the phenomenal world, three things are factually observed by any intelligent man: the living beings, the manifest world, and the ultimate control over them. The intelligent man can see that neither the living entity nor the phenomenal world are creations of chance. The symmetry of creation and its regulative actions and reactions suggest the plan of an intelligent brain behind them. And by genuine inquiry, one may find out the ultimate cause with the help of one who knows them factually. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shimshakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Svaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschadyadeshatarine. Another profound purport by Srila Prabhupada, smashing the ignorance and the illusion and the confusion which is going on in profusion in this material world. Dr. Stephen Hawking very proudly declares that everything comes out of absolutely nothing. But we've never seen any scientist who can produce something out of nothing in the laboratory. Let them produce even one blade of grass out of nothing. Then we may consider the authenticity or the bona fideness of their theory. But they can't even manufacture one blade of grass. What to speak of a whole universe, you see? So we have to understand this is a bunch of preposterous poppycock, what's going on in the name of science. It's simply preposterous poppycock. It has no factual basis in reality. According to their harebrained theories, you could take a bunch of construction materials and you could put it on a lot somewhere, some bags of cement, some panes of glass, some drywall, some wires, and some bricks, and some bags of, you know, all kinds of building materials on a park, on a lot somewhere. You throw a stick of dynamite in there, and what, you get a nice building out of the explosion, is it? This is the intelligence of these rascals. That there was a big explosion, is it? First there was a chunk, and then it exploded. And now we have this beautiful, ordered universe. It was, you see, it's just absolutely ridiculous. It's like saying you could compose, you could, you know, you just take some, a bunch of paints and a bunch of oil paint and a canvas, and you just kind of throw it on there and you get the Mona Lisa, you see, the famous Mona Lisa painting, just by throwing a bunch of oils on a canvas. They call this modern art, you know, nowadays, modern art. You just throw some oils on the canvas and it's supposed to be very artistic. So this is their modern, just like they have modern art, this modern abstract art, they have this modern theory of the universe. Just kind of throw a bunch of stuff out there and you get this beautiful ordered universe. But it's absolutely ridiculous. We have to hear, we have to use our intelligence. That's actually described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Using your intelligence means you become also a guru, you see. If you use your intelligence, then you're actually, if you follow your intelligence is also a guru. It's not an initiating guru, of course, but your intelligence is your siksha guru, your instructing guru. If you use your intelligence properly, you see, then your intelligence is also one of your gurus. Just like we learn a lesson from the dog, how to be faithful to the master. So the dog is our guru also in that sense. So if you take good intelligence from your own brain, that I need to see things clearly according to something that really makes logical sense, not some, you know, blind faith dogma that everything comes out of nothing. The scientists criticize us for being dogmatic, but actually they are the biggest dogmatists in the whole universe. We are not dogmatists. We analyze things very intelligently. That since something does not come out of nothing, there must be a source for existence. So what is the nature of that source? Let me find out what is that source. This is called understanding the absolute truth. The Vedic wisdom very wisely explains janmajashajataha. The absolute truth is that from which everything is emanating. So when you can get to that original source, you see, from which everything is coming, now you have come into contact with the absolute truth indeed. So when you're in touch with the absolute truth, then you can absolutely perceive things as they are, you see. So the process of Krishna consciousness is a process of putting you back into contact, into a state of harmony, in a state of synchronization with the absolute truth. Just like when you hear, just like here in the U.S., they have an atomic clock in Boulder, Colorado. It's considered the standard time, you see. So if you synchronize your watch with the atomic clock in Boulder, and we have some, actually we have some clocks here in the temple that have a radio transmitter in them that connect with the radio signals from the atomic clock in Boulder. So these clocks are right on the money. They're right to the second. They always stay right to the second. And actually I noticed the iPhone also does the same thing. The iPhone also is synchronized with the Boulder clock. So the point is, if you have your watch synchronized with the standard time, then you can do things, then you'll be on time. You'll be able to do things, function nicely. You'll be on work at work on time. You'll be to class on time. You'll be to Mangal Arti on time. You'll be to Bhagavatam class on time, etc. Now, you may be noticing every day we're coming on a little late, and I'll explain why. We have Guru Puja at 6, because we have to get the deities ready. There's a whole elaborate program of bathing and dressing in Radha Damodara every day. And at 6:45 we have Guru Puja. And so we have 6:45 Austin, Texas time, we have Guru Puja. We have Darshan at 6:45, yeah. Around 6:45, and then we have Guru Puja. So in order to worship the deities properly and worship Prabhupada properly, we have to give them a proper arati and kirtan. So it's not really quite enough time to be done, ready by 7, but 7 is a nice round number. Everybody's easy to remember 7. We have everybody come on by 7. So we're usually several minutes late because we're doing the greeting of the deities and Guru Puja and then going into Bhagavatam class. So that's, but the point is that if your watch is synchronized with the actual time, then you can be on time wherever you go, because everybody synchronizes with the actual time. If your watch is not synchronized, if you're on a different time, then you'll be late for this or early for that. You'll be a mess. Your life will be a mess if you're not synchronized. So in the same, in a similar way, of course it's a rough analogy, but in a similar way, we synchronize ourselves with the Supreme, with Krishna, the Absolute Truth. And that way, whatever we do, we're properly situated. Yat karoshi yat ashnasi yat jahosi dadasi yat yat tapashashi kontaya tat kadusha padarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, as well as whatever austerities you may perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. So this is our modus operandi. This is our technique. This is the way we do things in Krishna consciousness. We do not act independently. We act always as the subordinate servants of the Supreme Lord, understanding well that Krishna is actually the origin of everything. I'm simply his tiny part and parcel, and therefore I have to always be in sync with him, always be doing things that are pleasing to him. Now sometimes devotees think that, you know, a little deviation is okay. I mean, you know, you don't want to be too rigid because then you know, you might not be happy. You got to be a little loose, you know. And then you can, you know, kind of a balanced thing, you know. Don't follow too strictly Krishna consciousness. A little sense of gratification every now and then. A little breaking of the principles here and there, just a bit, stay relaxed, you know. They have this idea, but it's completely bogus. You can't compromise with your initiation vows. Whatever vow you took in initiation, which means no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, you have to follow that strictly. Not like I can have a little intoxication, you know, drink some Coca-Cola, even though it has caffeine in it. A little caffeine doesn't hurt, so, you know. No, a little, you give Maya an inch, she'll take a whole mile. So don't give in even an inch to Maya. If you want to actually be a devotee, you have to strictly follow your initiation vows. If you deviate, you're not really a devotee. You're a pseudo-devotee. You're not a real devotee. So don't be a pseudo-devotee. Be a real devotee by strictly following the regulative principles. And the result will be that Krishna will become your personal property in due course of time. You will, by selling yourself totally out to Krishna, Krishna will sell himself totally out to you also. So do yourself a favor, strictly follow the regulated principles of freedom. They are not, in other words, some people think that the regulated principles of slavery, so you have to deviate a little bit just to keep your sanity. But that's nonsense. These are the regulated principles of freedom. If you deviate from them, you are enslaving yourself within the material nature. So do not slave yourself within the modes of material nature by violating the regulated principles. Strictly follow them to the best of your ability, with all sincerity. And if there's any slight deviation in the midst of that sincere endeavor, Krishna will cover for you. You have to sincerely endeavor to the best of your ability in all times, places, and circumstances to always be pleasing to Krishna and Guru. Krishna and Guru are my very life and soul. Pleasing them is indeed my life, and displeasing them is death. I must always see that I am pleasing my spiritual master, that my every thought, my every word, my every deed, in all times, places, and circumstances, is pleasing to my spiritual master. That is what it means to be a disciple. You can't go on your own independent little tangent and think you're going to make it in Krishna consciousness. You cannot go out on your own little independent tangent. You have to put yourself completely under the guidance of your bona fide spiritual master, who is engaging you fully in the service of Krishna. This is the formula of how you will become an awakened soul, how the material nature will no longer be able to pinch you in any way. You have to become completely sold-out servant of Guru and Krishna. That's the key. So if we understand these points, if we understand this philosophy properly, you see, then our life becomes sublime. So carefully understand these teachings, carefully implement them. Do not be whimsical, do not be lazy, do not be crazy, do not be foolish, do not be puffed up. Always use your intelligence how to do things very nicely. Somebody asked me, they said, well, when you go out preaching, what should you do when you meet puffed up people? Should you reject them, defeat them? You know, how do you deal with puffed up people? And I told him, first of all, understand that you are puffed up. You see? He actually said, you know, we are, of course, formerly we were puffed up, but now we're not puffed up anymore. So how should we deal with puffed up people? The thing is, you have to understand you are puffed up. The fact is, you are puffed up. You see? That's why you're not seeing Krishna face to face, eye to eye at every minute. You see, that's why you're not actually able to see the mystic television, the leelas of Krishna happening within your heart at every minute, because you're puffed up, you're proud. So the first thing, how to deal with puffed up people, is how to deal with a puffed up person who is called you, you see? How to deal with that puffed up person? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has taught us very nicely. Gopina mamani vedana shuno vishai durjana sada kamadata kichu nahi mora guna. Gopina, Gopina. So the first thing is you have to remember, my dear Gopinath, I am a materialistic rascal. My heart is always overflowing with lust. If you examine me, you will see that I'm completely devoid of any kind of good qualities, you see. So in this way, one has to begin one's spiritual life realizing I'm just a rascal, a scoundrel. If you tell me I'm a rascal and a scoundrel, I'll say, thank you for reminding me. I keep forgetting. I keep thinking I'm a great devotee, a great advanced soul. But you're reminding me what a bumbling idiot I actually am. I'm indebted to you for reminding me of that, you see. Thank you. Please continue to remind me. Point out my defects in my attitude, in my speech, and in my behavior. Please always point these out to me. See, this is the move. You come into the society of devotees not to show off your devotion. You come into the society of devotees so they will point out to you what a rascal you are, and what are your bad qualities. That's the great advantage of Vaishnava Sangha. We want the Vaishnavas to be very kind, not to flatter us, but to actually show us what are our defects. That's when you're really getting Sadhu Sangha, you see. Otherwise, it's superficial. Mutual admiration society, you know. No, I need to find out those devotees who will point out my faults, you see. Those are devotees, they should take shelter of their association. Those who point out my faults, they're always telling me what a rascal and a scoundrel I actually am, you see. That's where I will get very, very solid advancement, moment by moment, in Krishna consciousness. So by finding out those devotees who will point out all of our defects, then we become very happily situated in our constitutional position. So once you realize that you're a scoundrel, and you, then you can actually deal with the scoundrels of this material world in a proper way, because you don't have a holier-than-thou attitude, think you're greater than them. You can approach them as their humble servant, you see. That my Guru Maharaj has kindly pointed out to me what a scoundrel, what an idiot, what an absolute rascal I am. And this is actually helping me to be able to develop a taste for the name. So, in this mood of humility, you see, then you can approach anyone. And Krishna will give you the intelligence how to help that person move forward on the path of spiritual awakening. How you can speak to them, how you can deal with them in such a way that they will realize there is a higher truth beyond this material existence. So this is the key. We have to really bring people to this platform beyond the material nature. We have an identity which has nothing to do with these material bodies. We have eternal identities in the pastimes of Krishna. we really, really have to become completely humble so that we can re-enter into those original relationships we had with Krishna, as Prabhupada personally told me. He said, now you just become qualified to see Krishna face to face. So you can't have any false pride. You can't remain a pseudo-devotee, gratifying your senses on the side, and at the same time expect to see Krishna face to face. You understand these points? You can't do that. It's nonsense. If you want to see Krishna, you have to kick out all pseudo-devotee tendencies. You have to become a completely surrendered devotee of your spiritual master and Krishna. You say, why can't I just be a surrendered devotee of Krishna? Why the guru? I mean, the guru tells me to do this and that. I don't really like it. I like to do my own thing. So can't I just be a devotee of Krishna? Because he's giving general instructions in the Gita, but he's not telling me okay, get out of bed. Time to come. He's not on my case at every minute like my spiritual master. So maybe it's better I just be a devotee of Krishna and not be a devotee of the spiritual master, one might think. But no, that doesn't work. Ye me bhakta jana partha na mai bhakta shtate jana mad bhakta nam chi ye bhaktas te me bhakta tamamata. My dear Arjuna, the one who is my devotee, he is not my devotee. But the devotee of my devotee, he is my actual devotee. So in this way, you have to understand the necessity of having a spiritual master, someone who will point out your faults and tell you what a rascal you actually are, how puffed up you actually are, you see. Just like you go to a doctor, you want a doctor who's going to give you a proper prognosis, who's actually going to tell you what's wrong with you. He's not going to just say, oh, you're very healthy. Be happy, you're healthy, go out and have a great time. That doctor is an enemy. You want a doctor who can tell you, my dear sir, you have this disease, and this is what you have to do now. You have to go into chemotherapy. You may not like it, but this is what you have to do to save your life. You want a doctor who's going to tell you the truth, not simply a flattering, doctor who twirls a lotus flower in his hand. You need a doctor who's going to point out what's wrong with you. So you need a genuine spiritual master who's going to point out what are your defects. That's what you need, you see. You don't need a charlatan who's going to just flatter you and twirl a lotus flower with his nice, beautiful, well-groomed, nicely groomed beard and beautiful long hair. You don't need such a guru. Need a guru is going to point out to you exactly what your defects are and how you can become liberated from those defects. Why is there so much buzzing going on in the kitchen? There shouldn't be so much beeping going on there again and again and again. So, now we can open it up for questions. Anyone have any questions? How to become truly, fully, and completely humble? By accepting the order of your spiritual masters, your life and soul. It's very simple, like Prabhupada did. You see. Prabhupada's our example. He's the acharya, the founder of acharya. He's the greatest acharya of our movement. If you study the life of Prabhupada and see how he fully dedicated himself to the order he received from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur to spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world, he sacrificed everything to do that, you see. That's what it means to be completely humble, sold out servant of your spiritual master. Now, Charlene has a question. How does one know when they are ready for initiation? Well, when you're able to steadily chant 16 rounds and followed by Gita principles, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, then you're ready. Of course, at the same time, we are a worldwide movement and we have centers all over the world. It's not everybody, we are an organization. So Prabhupada wanted the recommendation for initiation to come from a local authority. In other words, you need to have a nice relationship with your local authority, also your local temple. Not that you only work with your spiritual master and nobody else. No, the spiritual master is represented by your local authorities. So you also want to have a good relationship with your local authorities, so they will recommend you for initiation. You see, so you need to have followed, be chanting 16 rounds, following the regulated principles, and have a nice relationship with your local authorities as a member of your devotee community there. And then you're ready. Then you're ready, and myself and one of the other gurus will be happy to initiate you and take you out of this material existence. So, Bhakta Lauren, at what point is an aspiring devotee ready for initiation? I just answered that. Olivia, how can one serve him from afar? I'm a couple of hours from the temple, but I want to serve the community. Well, maybe they have service on the internet, for example. There's some internet preaching your temple is doing, and they can use somebody to help on the internet. So that's a possibility as well. Find out who's doing the website for your temple and see if you can help them on the internet. And that way you can serve them a distance, your local temple. That's a possibility. Of course, sending in donations, that's very important. The temples need money, so try to send in, be a monthly donor if you're not already, a monthly donor of your local temples. Be a monthly donor of your local temple. Okay, Hare Krishna Das. What is the proper attitude of a devotee to have for expectations from friends, family, and relatives? Well, the best thing is expect them to be against your Krishna consciousness. If you expect that, then you won't be disturbed. You say, okay, that's the par for the course, that the friends and family and my near and dear ones in this material world will most likely be opposed to my becoming Krishna conscious. If you have that expectation and it's anything less severe than that, you say, oh, that's Krishna's mercy. At least they came to the temple once and took some prasadam and liked it. At least that much is there. So the best thing is to expect nothing from them except negativity. And if you get something better than that, then you can feel it's Krishna's special mercy. Now, if your family members are devotees, then you should expect them to be, you should expect them to be properly situated in Krishna consciousness and follow the Vaishnava principles. And if they're not, you need to preach to them so they are doing that. Sometimes we see that the family members are the initiated devotees also, but sometimes they act in ways which are not according to Vaishnava principles. So if you have family members and friends who are devotees, but they're not strictly following it, you should preach to them and convince them to strictly follow this process. We don't want pseudo-devotees. We want real devotees who strictly follow the process. Someone who gets initiated, they chant, but they don't follow the principles very strictly, you see. They're pseudo-devotees. So if you have friends and family members who are devotees, but they're pseudo-devotees, you should preach to them. Or have somebody else preach to them if you're not able to convince them to strictly follow this path. Okay, that's what else we got going on here. Okay, Charlene, do we get karma for killing bodily germs when cleansing body and brushing teeth? Those things that are unavoidable, no, there's no karma. As long as you're engaged in devotional service, unavoidable things like driving your car down the highway and some bug gets smashed on the car radiator, which often happens, that's unavoidable. So there's no karma for that for you, although normally there would be. A materialist, for every bug he smashes on the windshield of his car driving down the freeway, he has to take birth as a bug and be smashed on somebody else's windshield. So for non-devotees, they pay for everything. But a devotee is giving some license. Don't take advantage of it, though. Don't go around smashing bugs for fun, obviously. If there's a little bug the other day was there, I picked him. I took some in the bathroom, and he was there on the floor. I took a piece of tissue paper, I very gently picked him up, and I carried him down the stairs. I chanted Hare Krishna to him, offered to bless him with the holy name. I chanted the Hare Krishna mantra with a little bug, and then I went outside and threw him in the garden, you see. So one should be very, very respectful and kind to all living creatures, but sometimes it's unavoidable. And it's not, therefore, like mortar and pestle, also grinding spices, the microbial germs are being crushed. So sometimes it's unavoidable. Just like the ambulance driver, he can run a red light and not get a ticket, so because he's authorized to do that. So the devotee has special license to engage in his normal activities, like brushing his teeth or whatever, without getting karma. But don't go beyond what is unavoidable and thinking you can get away with it, and you will get the reactions. If you start smashing bugs for fun, you will get the reaction. Okay, so... Okay. Let's see what we got here. What to do with attachment to the result in preaching with? Offer to Krishna. Actually, we want to be successful. Just like here in Austin, we were told to make the Austin Center a grand success. So obviously, it's Prabhupada's order. We want to do that. We're attached to the results. We want to make this temple in Austin a success. And then on the larger scale, Prabhupada told us to save the whole world. So we're very attached to making the whole world Krishna conscious. We want to do that. We want to make this Austin, here locally, this Austin Center a grand success. We want that every ISKCON center in the whole world should be a grand success. And we want that this Krishna conscious movement should indeed take over the entire world, and the entire world becomes Krishna conscious, and we are very attached to achieving this because it's the order of our spiritual master. So in this way, a devotee can be very, very attached. I'm going on a book distribution today. I want as many books as possible to go out. You see, that's a very nice attachment. That's not material. That's a spiritual attachment. Okay, what stops us from being fully surrendered to Guru and Krishna, and how to overcome them? Bad association is one thing. False pride is another one, you see. Bad association encourages you to maintain your false pride. So they go hand in hand. False pride and bad association go hand in hand. So you got to break free from the false pride and the bad association by taking shelter of the guru and the association of devotees. Okay, in the Truth Works book, Srila Gurudev, you have said that Krishna consciousness is the essence of all existence. Please explain it more about it. Yeah. Existence means, in Sanskrit, it's sat, sat, there is sat, eternal existence, sat chit ananda. Living entity is sat chit ananda, eternal existence. We exist with a certain nature, and that nature is Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness is an intrinsic aspect of our existential nature. It's inseparable. When you actually are Krishna conscious, then you truly exist. Of course, we exist even when we're not Krishna conscious, but it's a pseudo-existence. We're not existing in our actual nature. We're existing in a, like it's a dream state, you see. You exist in a dream, but it's not the reality, you see. It's a covering, it's an imaginary state. It's real, but it's not the real, it's not the actual reality, which is the waking state. Okay. Very good, Charlene. I'm glad you're taking good care of the bugs. Very good. Okay. Olivia, thank you for your wonderful suggestions. I appreciate your appreciation, Olivia. Okay, so any other questions? We still have 5 minutes, so maybe some questions. Everybody's saying thank you very much. Well, that's very nice, but I need a question. Somebody give me a question. Okay, here we go. Shivani, the act or practice of risking the loss of something important by taking a chance in gambling. So how do we know if we are not gambling at every second? Well, there's one gamble which is very nice. Why don't you, they lay their bet on the table, right? And hope to win, isn't it? That's gambling. You lay your bets on the table and hope to win. Why don't you gamble, do this gamble, lay your life on the table for Krishna and see what is the result. So you want to gamble. If you like gambling, then here's what you do. You place your, you put your life on the table, give your whole life to Guru and Krishna. I'm going to risk this. I'm going to gamble this one life. I'm going to give it completely to Guru and Krishna. I'll be completely surrendered to whatever my Guru tells me to do. I'll be completely sold out to my spiritual master. And I'll see what the result is, you see. So that's a gamble we encourage everyone to make. It's a sure bet, though. It's a sure bet. You're not going to lose. In fact, you will gain unlimited opulence. When you give your life completely to Guru and Krishna, you will achieve unlimited opulence beyond the wildest dreams of even Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods. Okay, now, Bhakta Lauren. Can rounds chanted while driving be applied toward the 16 rounds, or is it in some way apradaya? Well, if you're a passenger, it's okay, but not when you're the driver. Because if you're chanting your rounds properly when you're driving, you'll have an accident. You can't do both. You have to give Krishna your undivided attention. And when you're driving, you can't give your undivided attention to the mantra, because then you'll have an accident. You cannot count chanting when driving as your 16. Now, you can. And also having one hand in the bead bag, it doesn't give you a good grip on the steering wheel in case of an emergency also. So you need to find a way to get your rounds done, not when you're driving the car. If you're a passenger, it's distracting to be riding in a vehicle, but it can be done if you really focus, close your eyes and, you know, really go deep in the mantra. If you're a passenger, it can be done. But not when you're the driver. No way. Absolutely not. Okay. Let's see here. If some devotee is serious, is envious about us, how to deal with them? Feel sorry for the poor fool. I mean, really. So how does one know if someone is envious? Well, that's a whole other thing. Sometimes an example would be, let's say you're preaching and they keep cutting in. You're preaching to somebody, you have a nice thing going, they just keep cutting into the conversation, wanting to take over the conversation. That's a symptom of envious devotee. That's it. You're preaching, they just come in and want to take over. They're envious because you've got a nice preaching going on. They want to take over your preaching and bump you out. You see? So they see you're preaching to a guest. They see the guest is really receptive. And they're envious. And I wish I was preaching to that guest instead of you. So I'm going to jump into the conversation, take over, and just bump you and throw you out of the conversation. That's a symptom of envy. You see? Wanting to take over some other devotee's preaching. Prabhupada's godbrothers are very envious of him, that he was so successful. And they actually tried to sabotage his preaching. In Mayapur, an envious godbrother sent the gundas, the hoodlums, to attack our temple, if you can imagine, to physically attack it, performing violence on our temple. A godbrother, an envious godbrother, Prabhupada, sent the gundas to attack our temple. Because he couldn't stand to see someone more successful in preaching than he was. So it does happen sometimes. These are not real devotees. No offense, but I have to tell the truth. Anyone who is envious is not actually a devotee. They're a devotee in name only. They're not really a devotee. A devotee means someone who is non-envious. Anyone who has this quality of envy in their heart, they're a pseudo-devotee at best. They're not actually a devotee. So And this way you have to understand. Srila Gurudev, we see people who are saying or publishing envious messages about Krishna, how to stop this without increasing their offense. You may not be able to. I mean, it's tons of blasphemy on the internet, and trying to counter it, it gives them more fuel for their blasphemy. So the best thing is just to neglect it, ignore it, and train up everyone else how to deal with it if they happen to counter it on the internet. I mean, there's tons of blasphemy against ISKCON, against the GBC, against this guru, against that guru. There's propaganda against me on the internet, saying I'm a pseudo-guru because I'm very unhappy they're not picking me up in a Rolls Royce. That's actually stated on the internet. Sankarshan Das is lamenting that he's not being transported in a Rolls Royce car. Therefore, he's a bogus guru. I mean, they make all... Why do they keep... This beeping is... Please stop all that beeping. It's too much. So... Okay. I hope that's the last one. Prabhupada is very intolerant of any sound in the lecture. So he's trying to carry his mood. All right, so let's see what's the next question. Okay, when the four Kumaras curse Jai and Vijay, how to understand they did not commit Vaishnava aparad by cursing pure devotees? Well, it was taken as an offense. That's why they had come out of the material world. It was treated as an offense. They did offend the four Kumaras, and therefore they had to take birth in the material world. That was their reaction. So if you commit Vaishnava aparad, you're going to get a reaction. Like Jai and Vijay got reaction, you will get reaction if you commit Vaishnava aparad. So one has to be very careful. Just thinking of Jai and Vijay, they actually became demons as a punishment for having... offended great devotees. So, do you want to become a demon in your next birth? So, one has to be very careful not to offend Vaishnavas.
This says that offenders toward Krishna can be delivered by the holy name, but if one does offense towards the devotee, even Krishna doesn't.
So Guru Mataji is making a very nice point. If you offend the holy name, or you offend Krishna, Krishna can forgive you. You offend the Vaishnavas, Krishna cannot forgive you. Only the Vaishnava can forgive you. If you offend the devotee, your only hope is for that devotee to forgive you. You see, that's your only hope. You offend the devotee. It's not that you can say, well, Guru Maharaj, I offended so-and-so. Is it okay? Am I forgiven? Guru Maharaj can't say yes. He can't say no, you're forgiven. No, you have to get... You have to be forgiven by that particular devotee that you offended. That's how you have to be. Is it? So actually we're going over time now. Of course we start a little late, so.
It wasn't the offense that four Kumaras was cursing the devotees also? Isn't it offensive that four Kumaras was cursing the devotees?
But the four Kumaras... They cursed them to take birth in material world. Or maybe that was the question, the other way around. Oh, the Kumaras. Oh, yeah, I see. The question is the reverse. Yeah, okay. this is actually, we should not imitate such things. This is divine lila amongst great personalities, so that the Lord's pastimes could go on in a very exciting, wonderful way. Krishna has a desire to kill demons, but who's he going to kill? His devotees have to become demons.
I
did say in the opposite way. 1 minute, I'm speaking. Be patient. So, don't try to imitate that you offended me, so I will curse you. No, don't do that. These are great liberated personalities, and they such things are pastimes between great personalities. Don't think that you're on that level, that you're going to have some lila by cursing somebody. You're going to curse yourself if you do that. Okay.
So first thing I would say, one is not powerful enough to curse.
Huh?
In the material world, we are not that elevated, nor we are strong enough to curse anybody.
We don't have the power to curse anybody anyway. In this age, you see, after Sringi cursed Maharaj Pariksit, the Brahmins lost the power to curse. That power of the Brahmins had such power that whatever words they say, that thing would come true. They could say anything and make it come true just by the power of their words in the previous ages. Whatever they said, it would come true. See, that was the power of their words. I'm speaking. You have to be patient now. So, when Sringi abused that power, now the Brahmins don't have that power anymore. Now you can speak. Yes, we can see when great pure devotees curse someone, it's for their benefit. That's right. That's right. It's like Narada Muni cursed Nalakuvira Manigriva, and that was the greatest blessing. If I can be cursed by a great powerful Vaishnava like Narada Muni, that would be the greatest blessing of my whole existence. That's another point. Good point. But don't think that you can do that. I will curse. I will bless with curses. We're not on that level. It's not in this age the Brahmins don't have that power. And even if they did, we're not pure enough to be on that level. Brahma Tejas is lacking in us. We can hardly even control our senses, but to speak of being able to utter potent curses or blessings. We can pray that Krishna will bless them. May Krishna bless them with pure devotional service. That we can beg Krishna to bless them. That we can do. We don't ask Krishna to curse them, though. And we can ask Krishna, Krishna, please bless the living entities of this world that they may become pure devotees. Svasti astu vishvasya kala vrasidatam dayanti bhutani shivang matodaram manastabhajang bhujatam madokshate naveshitam mamatarapya haitaki. May there be good fortune throughout the entire universe and may all envious persons become pacified. There's a nice prayer like that, you see, in the Bhagavatam. So it is a mood not that I can bless them, but we're begging Krishna that they all become pure devotees. That he may bless them, that they all may become the pure devotees.
Pure devotee does not want to curse anybody, but sometimes when the devotee tries to rectify, when they challenge, then they say curse.
Otherwise, I don't follow. Can you say that again?
Pure devotees generally, out of compassion, they do not curse anybody.
Right. Correct them what?
Correct them for their wrong.
Oh, correct them from their mistakes.
Yes. But if somebody is adamant and not to want, just like when Maharaj Amrish, he did not curse Durvasa. And Durvasa went up to all the way up to Vaikuntha, and Krishna said, no, I cannot forgive you, you have to go down. So I'm saying the general principle, devotees do not like to curse anybody.
Yes. Devotee is the well-wishing friend of all. He doesn't have a desire to curse anyone. That's it. He wants to bless everyone. That's his mind. He wants that everyone should become happy in Krishna consciousness. Like Lord Jesus is the perfect example. They're crucified, they nailed him to a cross. He said, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. This is the perfect example of the mood of a Vaishnava. He's praying to Krishna or to the Heavenly Father in the case of Jesus. He's, that is also Krishna, but he's calling him like that. praying that the God may bless this living entity. Even if this living entity is torturing me and killing me, I'm praying that they may become blessed and forgiven for their offense. Okay, so we'll stop here. And we thank you all very much for coming today. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.